This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
And this is Beth Silvers. Thank you for joining us for Pantsuit Politics. In case the title didn't alert you, today's episode features mature themes and language. Please take care as you need to. While I was on my June sabbatical, we got an email that had our team saying yes out loud. The pitch came from Old Pros, a nonprofit media organization working to change the status of sex workers in society. Elise quickly arranged an interview, which Sarah recorded in short order. Why did this email stand out in the sea of pitches that we receive each week? Sex work had not been on our whiteboard of topics for this quarter. I think it's because we see sex and our attitudes about sex at the root of many, if not most, of our major controversies. You can't have a real conversation about abortion without talking about sex. And just a quick shout out here to Ohio voters for getting to the polls in August in order to keep the rules the same for their November abortion initiative. Gender identity and masculinity, the whole of the Barbie movie, pretty much everything connected to what Republicans love to term as wokeness, conspiracy theories, legitimate concerns about trafficking and human dignity, all of it relates to sex. And you really can't have a complete conversation about sex without talking about sex work. The criminalization of sex work in particular says so much about the gaps between who we say we want to protect and who we actually protect. What we say is dangerous and what is actually dangerous. We know this topic will push a lot of buttons. When I try to step back and make a list of declarative sentences expressing my opinions about sex work, the list is as convoluted and contradictory as it gets. It's also short. I have a lot more questions than sentences. And that's why I think the conversation you're about to hear is so valuable. You probably won't agree with everything you hear. That's not the point. The point is to keep thinking and keep listening and keep working toward a world with a much healthier perspective on sex. With that goal in mind, here's Sarah and Caitlin Bailey.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. From their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs. But ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our fearless finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting. Caitlin Bailey is a sex worker rights advocate, comedian, and writer. She is the founder and executive director of Old Pros, a nonprofit media organization creating conditions to change the status of sex workers in society. And she hosts the Oldest Profession podcast. Caitlin, welcome to Pantsuit Politics.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. Can I tell you something really weird but relevant about Pantsuit Politics?
Sure.
Okay. So if you were to log on to the backside of pantsuitpoliticsshow.com, our website, you would find that pretty consistently in the top five pages on our podcast is a page called Strippers versus Prostitutes, a Comparison. It is a term paper I wrote 20 plus years ago.
Wow.
That I referenced on a show in 2016 and that we then posted the text of. And it just gets consistent traffic, which I just think goes to show that there are so many questions about sex work that don't go answered, that don't go discussed. And the fact that this like weird 20 plus year old term paper I wrote gets so much traffic is proof of that.
Yeah, I absolutely think that there's an appetite for more information about sex worker rights, sex worker politics, and what we focus on, which is sex worker history.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Now, I'm intrigued. When I was reading your bio, you describe yourself as coming out as a sex worker in 2015. I love that language. Tell me more about that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the shame and stigma around sex work, I think, is deeply connected to the LGBTQ plus movement. Sex workers have always been a part of that movement. You know, the shot glass heard around the world that was thrown by Marsha P. Johnson that started the Stonewall riots that was led by sex workers. Same with Compton's Cafeteria, which predates Stonewall by a few years. And the, you know, sex workers and members of the queer community have always shared spaces and a shared stigma and rights that threaten one of us, right? Whether you're talking about trans kids, whether you're talking about censorship on porn or erotic materials or access to basic reproductive health care or information, medically accurate sex ed, we are all in this together. So I had to, in order to take on the public role that I have through Old Pros and telling my story as a sex worker, I needed to go through a coming out process, which I think, like for many folks, started with me telling strangers and, you know, lower stakes folks, and eventually led up to me coming out to my family, which was especially challenging with my dad, who, you know, spent 30 years in the Army. He was a Green Beret, and we, you know, loved each other very much and have a lot of respect for each other. And I knew that so much of his identity as a good dad was wrapped up in, you know, whether or not I chose to engage in this work or chose to tell my story publicly. And we eventually got to a really great place, my dad and I, but it took a couple of years of really rewriting those narratives and showing up and having really hard conversations.
Well, you're a comedian, and so I know you'll understand, like, when those bits bubble up and they touch something. The second you said that, I thought about the Chris Rock bit.
Keep her
off the pole. Your only job is to keep her off the pole.
Yeah.
And how we laugh, but we're laughing
because we want to talk about something, because it's touching on something much, much deeper.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, as you look through this history, I love the historical emphasis. What other threads are you picking up? What other patterns are you seeing when we talk about sex work and we talk about the ways we think about it culturally and the way we legislate it and do policy around it?
Well, sex worker rights and the criminalization of abortion and contraception have a shared history, right? This dates back to the Comstock Law of the 1870s, right? Anthony Comstock built his career attacking Victoria Woodhull, who was the first woman to open up a brokerage firm on Wall Street, the first woman to address Congress on the issue of suffrage.
First woman to run for president.
And the first woman to run for president, right? But many people have not heard about her because she was also a sex worker. And this demonization of loose women and this demonization of public women, which is sometimes a synonym for sex worker, but is just as often a synonym for a woman literally taking up space in public. And so we criminalized abortion, contraception, prostitution, and alcohol all at the same time. And that was during the progressive era here in the US. And we did a lot of it in the name of specifically protecting white women. You know, one of the major pieces of national legislation on this issue is the Mann Act, which is also known as the White Slave Law. And like many of our anti-trafficking laws today, this was sold to the American people as a way of protecting vulnerable women. But we didn't protect any women from the people who were actually committing violence against us. Instead, we made it a crime to transport women across state lines for immoral purposes, which led to criminalizing very consensual interracial relationships and inconveniencing a lot of women in show business on their way to their next gig.
We talked about this. We had Monique Melton on, who's a Black influencer who went viral during the George Floyd protest and that sort of moment in American history. And I said, what happened there reminds me of that time in the progressive era where it's like, you want to argue, like, give us voting rights, give us more rights because we're like morally better. But that shit is a trap. That is a trap.
Yes.
Like when you hold someone up, it's sort of like, you know, the wise Indian. Like when you're saying we're different because we're better, like that is a, that's a trap. Like, don't fall for it. There's a lot of historical incidences where because you just, you shut off your humanity. It's just another form of dehumanization where you don't allow for the nuances and complexity. And you say, we deserve this treatment because we're human, not because we're special.
Absolutely. I mean, I have it right here. Rights, not rescue, right? Which is one of the many phrases that we have. But one of the main problems is that we've conflated, you know, violent exploitation with prostitution. Prostitution has become a symbol of exploitation in this country, which means we spend an incredible amount of energy trying to suppress or eradicate the oldest profession, which actually distracts us from our shared goal of ending or reducing exploitation.
Right.
So there are absolutely adult consensual sex workers. We're a huge part of the market. We've always been innovators and early adopters at the front lines of, you know, arts, technology, financial services. And there's absolutely exploitation, both in the sex industry and also in every other labor sector. Mm. According to the Labor Department's own numbers, the overwhelming majority of people who are violently exploited in this country work in agriculture, domestic labor, mining, food and bev. But we aren't devoting any resources to help raising the negotiating power of those workers. Instead, we're using the apparatus of the state to sick, you know, ICE on undocumented workers, or we're paying law enforcement to crack down on consensual adult sex workers, and we're selling all of this as somehow being anti-trafficking. But anti-prostitution does not equal anti-trafficking and vice versa.
I think that distinction between sexualization and exploitation is so important and so key. And again, talking about the history, not just in the United States, you know, I just did a book report on our premium channel about a book about modern Ireland called We Don't Know Ourselves. And it was so wild. I was reading about how, you know, the Catholic Church was so powerful in Ireland, obviously, and the sort of anti-sexualization sexualized everything. Like, it was just like, don't think about sex. Don't think about sex. Don't have premarital sex. Don't have, you know, don't use birth control. Sex, 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 sex. And at the same time, I was watching Shiny Happy People, that documentary about the Duggars. Yeah. Same thing. It was like, this one had this great line where she was like, if somebody's like, don't look at your sister's boobs, don't look at your sister's boobs. Don't.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to look at your sister's boobs. And like, and inside those environments where you have such a hypersexualized mindset, it creates ripe environments for exploitation because you're focusing on the sexualization and not the exploitation and not the abuse and not the violence.
And I think specifically something that that documentary, Shiny Happy People, does so well is drawing a line between how the stigma and shame around sexuality really disempowers Yep. victims from any kind of self-advocacy. And I mean, if you want to talk about organized sex trafficking, the Catholic Church is a really great example of an institution that has invested a huge amount of resources into sexually exploiting not just women, but also children. You know, something that we talk about at the Oldest Profession podcast and also in my show is that the Catholic Church was actually the largest brothel owner in Europe for a period of 400 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were able to get away with that with this, you know, like sort of the Madonna whore complex and the demonization of women. And I think it's so important, especially for contemporary feminists to understand that whore phobia and the stigma against sex workers is the foundation of misogyny. Mm. And that policing prostitution is not protection. It's patriarchy. It's coercive control. Because the way that you police prostitution is that you govern, you dictate, you control where women go, who they talk to, what they wear. And it continues to shock me that this is still a debate amongst contemporary feminists where there is an antagonism between sex workers and, you know, incredible heroes of the feminist movement like Gloria Steinem, who continue to advocate for policies that direct law enforcement to continue to harass and subjugate and control people who are engaging in work that is older than money and has always been a path towards a kind of liberation, right? Purchasing power is important, especially when we're talking about the hundreds, if not thousands of years before women had property rights.
Mm, yeah. No, I think that makes so much sense. And I think this idea that when you criminalize prostitution, I mean, again, when I was writing that term paper, I remember, I don't even remember what course it was in, but I do remember learning a lot about the decriminalization of prostitution. It made so much sense to me. Of course, if you say what you're doing is illegal and then someone abuses you, be it a client, be it a pimp, be it whatever, well, are you going to go to the police? No, because you're also breaking the law. You're vulnerable if you go to the police.
Exactly.
And I think there are, you know, certain progressive circles where that's accepted. And I really want to get to the more like policy legislative side. But I think culturally, I think it's so interesting to me that you say, like, we're going to have a cultural conversation and like cultural change. And look, here's where I think there's an application about this that is much harder for progressive circles, much harder for everybody. I think this is true when it comes to child sex abuse and pedophiles. When you say, when I go around in my community and I see on the back of a truck, murder your local pedophile, does that create an environment where someone can report something problematic? Or if they feel, or if they see something with their family members, they feel comfortable going to the police or they feel comfortable saying, I'm having these thoughts? Of course not. Like, of course they don't feel comfortable saying that. You create this. When you put it in the dark, you are ripe for exploitation.
Especially in an environment where we are, again, increasingly conflating, right?
Yep.
Visibly queer folks, right?
Yep.
Trans folks with pedophilia and sexual exploitation. And that is a very old story, and it is deeply connected to the history of sex worker rights and moving towards a future where we can share our wisdom and participate in the communities that we're already a part of.
And I think it's just important to articulate, too. Like, it's not like we're going to get to some utopia where sex and exploitation and violence, I don't want to say are connected, but are tied up. It's a deeply vulnerable act. There's a lot going on there. How do you make sense of that? Like,
sure.
We're not trying to get somewhere where we fix it and there's no longer violence and exploitation tied up with matters of sex. So how do you piece that apart in your own mind?
Well, we know that decriminalization of sex work is the only policy that reduces violence. And the reason that that is because it increases the negotiating power of providers. You know, and this isn't just me saying this. This is backed up by the World Health Organization, Amnesty International, human rights organizations around the world. We've implemented a lot of policies. You know, New Zealand decriminalized prostitution in 2003. And when they did an analysis and a report came out in 2015, they found that sex workers were reporting less violence, more comfort in declining clients that they didn't feel safe with. And I think critically, more comfort reporting crimes committed against them to the police for exactly what you were saying before. We know that we don't see these results when you talk about legalization or regulation. We don't see these results when we're talking about end demand policies or criminalizing clients or third party folks. And we certainly don't see those results with criminalized prostitution.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs, but ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
In previous episodes, I have outed myself as a bed-making fanatic. I am very serious about my bed being an oasis, a gift to Chad and me as we crawl into it at the end of a long day. So I want to return to how much I love my Boll & Branch sheets. With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover a new level of softness. The sheets are made from 100% organic cotton in a buttery, breathable weave that truly gets softer every time you wash them. And you know that I like to do that once a week, so my Boll & Branch are rapidly aging like a fine wine. The sheets look great. I have them in a beautiful slate color. They stay put, so making my bed is quick and easy. They are a bestseller for a reason. The signature sheets feel incredible on night one. They are loved by millions of sleepers, and they come with a 30-night worry-free guarantee. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code PANTSUIT at bollandbranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com, promo code PANTSUIT. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
It seems like to have the cultural conversation, you have to tease apart this sense of like the reality. We're not telling you we're creating a utopia because then people don't believe you. But also, I think there's a deep sense with sex, even though we've come so far in so mm-hmm. many areas, LGBTQ rights, facing the sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, all these things, to tell people, like, it doesn't have to be like that way. Like, there's this sense of intractability, I think, sometimes when you talk about our sexual culture.
When I'm talking to, you know, my fellow progressives, folks that have spent a lot of time in reproductive justice, or, you know, I cut my teeth as a political advocate, as an abortion rights advocate. And so I think that there's a distinction between being pro-abortion and pro-choice. And you can recognize that this is a difficult personal decision, while also recognizing that criminalizing abortion doesn't make it go away. It only makes it less safe. And the same can be said for prostitution policy, right? Yep. People engage in sex work on the full spectrum of choice, circumstance, and coercion, as they do with any job, and as they also do when seeking abortion care. But what we know is that criminalizing this or pushing it further underground, again, doesn't eliminate, but it does make it less safe for everyone involved.
Right. It's like you're not saying we're going to fix it, but we're going to step in the right direction. And I wonder, Do you have any success or momentum or even just sort of anecdotal experiences with right-wing people who are concerned about the power of the government and don't want the power of the government in certain places? Like, is there any movement there? Because, I've had movement with my religious friends, deeply religious friends, around abortion on this, saying, like, we don't have to talk about the morality or ethics of this. We need to talk about, is the government making it worse or better?
Correct. Absolutely. And so I think there are a lot of, you know, principled libertarians. The Libertarian Party was the first to adopt the decriminalization of sex work as part of their party platform. Mm. There are folks on the right that are interested in getting the government out of people's bedrooms or massage parlors or other, you know, private spaces. But this is really a bipartisan issue. You know, Democrats have supported some really bad policies when it comes to porn and prostitution over the years. And so, you know, I love to blame the right, but I think there's a lot of shared responsibility and there has to be a lot of cultural movement across the board. I think the most important demographic to move on this issue are feminists who have never engaged in sex work themselves and recognizing that there's a lot of shared issues, right, between folks that engage in this and just basic fundamental rights for women who want to participate in public life.
How do you talk about or work through the policy implications of that distinction between sex work and porn? Like, where are the are there policy differences with the decriminalization? Because it is different. And I would think you'd get a little more fear and pushback with porn because that affects a lot more people, at least in theory, than prostitution.
I mean, I think it's important to say that the stigma and shame and false narratives is shared, right? Sex work is a really broad umbrella term that includes, you know, porn performers, content creators, legal strippers, criminalized full service providers, dominatrixes, phone sex operators. I want to include Hooters waitresses because we're trying to, you know, build a big tent. Anyone that exchanges any kind of erotic labor, right, for money or something of value, which is a really broad and expansive thing, right? And this is something that predates us as a species, right? This is literally older than money. Right now, you know, full service sex workers and also content creators have a lot of the same shared battle space, right? Because we've all been using the internet to connect, schedule, and screen our clients. And so one of the activating moments for me was in 2018 when Donald Trump signed SESTA-FOSTA into law. That's a federal law that stands for Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking and Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. This is when Backpage was seized by the FBI, mm-hmm. Craigslist Erotic Services went away, and all of the platforms that sex workers had been using to safely schedule and screen our clients, right? This was, if you want to talk about cutting pimps or potentially abusive third-party folks out of the
equation.
Yeah, it was
like decentralizing.
Exactly. These message boards and platforms were great for us. And so now content creators, even legal content creators, are facing very similar barriers with this conflation, right, of sexual expression with violent exploitation. Mm. So there are all of these laws that are now limiting, you know, like Visa and MasterCard from processing on OnlyFans or porn sites. They're trying to make users or viewers of porn upload their ID, which, you know, I would never encourage anyone to put themselves on a stigmatized list
Right.
And so there's a lot of shared cultural fights, even if the sort of minutiae of the different laws that we face are different.
And that's so hard because I know a lot of those laws came about because of, you know, research into some of these platforms where teen girls were getting videos and stuff posted without their permission and couldn't get them taken down. So how do you see that the process is that, again, protect against mm-hmm. exploitation without further criminalizing legitimate sex work?
Absolutely. I think the problem with, you know, criminalizing or trying to aggressively repress erotic content, especially in the name of reducing exploitation, is that it paints everyone with a really broad brush, right? It's the same problem as like conflating clients with predators, right? Mm. We need to be able to make these distinctions. So if all porn is exploitation, then when you report revenge porn, right, or when you report that your image is being used without your consent, even if you are, you know, an adult content creator, if you find that your content is being shared by third-party platforms where you're not profiting, that's a violation and you ought to be able to report that. But it, when we conflate all of it, right, as being exploitation, we lose the ability to make those distinctions. Mm. And, you know, this comes back to, you know, I think maybe an oversimplified call from the Me Too movement, right, of believe women. Right? Listen to us. What we will tell you, sex workers will tell you, content creators will tell you what is and what is not consensual. We have so much to contribute about, you know, negotiated consent and being able to articulate and enforce boundaries when it comes to our bodies and our images. But we cannot do that when all erotic expression or all sex work is conflated with exploitation and violence.
That's what happens, right? When you conflate everyone and call everyone a victim, then you're protecting them and not listening to them. And you're thinking you know best, and they're in a situation that doesn't know best. Instead of saying, you don't have to start from scratch. They can tell you what they need. Like, they can empower it. But you have to like, that cultural conversation is the empowerment part. So tell me how you got to I love the stand-up comedian aspect of this and the historical educational aspect of this. So how did you come to see that as such an important part of the process?
Where shall I begin? So working as a stand-up comedian, I obviously have very strong feelings about freedom of expression and being an active agent in my own life. Mm. And so I had done sex work, you know, both coming from a place of curiosity and feeling very drawn to these stories. You know, I've been reading about courtesans since, you know, for as long as I can remember. I have been obsessed with sex workers in history. So it's sort of an innate interest of mine. But I also used sex work to subsidize my career in comedy, which is not unusual. Mm. Sex work has funded, I think, more, you know, students, artists, and entrepreneurs than all of the grants combined. But when Sesta Fosta passed in 2018, and I went to my fellow mostly male comedians, when I felt like this was an existential threat to freedom of expression on the internet, I was met with a lot of blank stares. Mm. People were not making that connection. I think because of, you know, some misogyny that was very much present in that community and not seeing women or especially sex workers as people. But, you know, that was sort of an activating moment for me. I became the, you know, founding director of communications for Decriminalized Sex Work, which is a national advocacy organization pursuing a state-by-state strategy to try to decriminalize sex work. And they're doing great work in 11 states across the country. But ultimately, I left that organization to start Old Pros because after speaking with legislators for, you know, 2+ years, it became very clear to me that we are not going to get good policy change on this issue until we really invest in narrative and cultural change. Legislators are terrified of their own constituents when it comes to this issue. And I think it's really important for us to change the story about sex work. It's a necessary step to changing laws and ultimately the legal status of sex workers in our communities.
And it's not like you could ignore it. It's a very popular subject matter
in
pop culture. If you just pretend like it doesn't exist, then that's what's filling the space. Well, then now that you're an expert, I have to ask you what you think are let's start with the worst portrayals of sex work in pop culture, like really famous ones that you think are truly terrible.
Oh, goodness.
I'm assuming Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman, I think, is bad for many reasons. I mean, it's an endearing story, right? Like, there's nobody that walks away from that movie, yeah, exactly, thinking that, you know, Julia Roberts is the villain or victim in that story. But, like, you know, what you see in the first 20 minutes of that film is that she's just really bad at her job, actually.
But that's why we're supposed to like her, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Because if she was a good sex
prostitute,
worker,
would she be a hero?
And she wouldn't. We wouldn't root rescued. For.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes. I know that there have been several terrible documentaries that have been made about sex work. There is a really good one coming out called A Stroll. That's a history of sex work in the meatpacking district, and the way that, you know, the trans community really came together and provided a lot of mutual aid and support in a society that had effectively failed them. And I think that's a story that is really present in sex work, right? Whether you're talking about brothels or online communities, sex workers are really have been provided a lot of care to the communities that they're a part of.
I love that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, maybe it's because I came of age with Pretty Woman, and so this narrative was implanted in my mind. I've watched a lot of pop culture. When you said courtesans, I immediately thought of Harlots, which I think is a great
Harlots
show.
Is great.
So good. Yeah. So well done. I think the way they tease apart the difference between sort of high culture, this is back in the, like, I guess it's probably like the 1700s, and the, like, sort of low income and the wars they have between each other. It's a very female-focused show. Like, yep. I think it's great. I used to love I think it was only on for a couple seasons with Billy Piper, the Secret Diary of a Call Girl. I think that's the name of it. I thought that show.
There's also The Deuce, which
is
very good.
Yes, that's the one I was going to bring up. Yes. I'm so glad you couldn't, I couldn't remember the name of it. I'm so glad you remembered it. I thought that show was, I mean, it's Maggie Gyllenhaal. I mean, she's not going to do a story about women in any profession without bringing, like, this nuanced, complex performance. But I think that's you need that. If you're going to change the conversation, these, like, beautifully complicated, like, with some real depth portrayals of sex work are going to be essential. It makes it sad. The Secret Life of a Call Girl is set present day, but the other two are so past oriented. I think you'll need more sort of, we're not just trying to rewrite history. We're trying to tell you right now that the present is different than you think it is.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's so important. So tell us where, though, the legislative fight is right now.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready, our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high-quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
We're going to work on this cultural conversation, but where's the legislative fight?
Yeah. So the overwhelming majority of arrests in this country happen on the state level, right? And I think a really good example of this is what happened a couple of years ago with the Robert Kraft sting in South Florida. Do you remember this?
No.
Yeah. So Robert Kraft is the owner of the New England Patriots. He is a maybe famous or possibly infamous billionaire. I'm not a huge fan, but he was caught up in a sting that happened in South Florida. And what happened was there were five different law enforcement agencies, three local police departments, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security.
What?
Who all invested more than 6 months in these elaborate schemes to install hidden cameras in these totally legally licensed massage parlors that were sometimes providing consensual sexual services, right? There were no community complaints. There was no allegation of trafficking or violence or anything that was happening. But they spread out, they installed all of these hidden cameras and recorded what I can only imagine was like the world's most boring. And at the culmination of that investigation, they descended on, you know, I think it was four or five massage parlors and arrested all of these men. I think it was like 200 men and then 19 women. And they threw themselves press conferences, and they sold this narrative to the American people that they had rescued these sex slaves from this international sex trafficking ring. But when the dust settled, the only people who were actually facing criminal charges were the 19 women they had ostensibly rescued from this very consensual, again, legally licensed massage parlor. Nobody arrested was under the age of 30. And Robert Kraft, who was the most, you know, famous person who was caught up in this sting, sort of became the face of it. But I think it's important to remember that he was a 70-year-old widower who paid a 45-year-old woman to massage a different part of his body. And as a taxpayer, I have a lot of questions about why the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security is involved in that non-issue. And I think it's also important for listeners to recognize that this is what so-called anti-trafficking efforts look like when they are conducted by law enforcement. And that is happening all over the country, right? That was just a very high profile case that happened to get a lot of media attention. But these stings are happening everywhere, right? You have law enforcement officers that are effectively LARPing, right, as providers or potential clients. And they're arresting people for engaging in consensual adult sex work and selling that right to their local communities and tapping into this big, sort of pile of anti-trafficking money that is very aggressively committed to the false, you know, conflation between sex work and violent exploitation. So that's what most arrests look like. There are also some really bad federal laws. The first federal anti-prostitution law is also our first federal anti-immigration law. That's the PAGE Act of 1870, which criminalized the racist term Mongolian women from immigrating to the U.S. for immoral purposes. We see that language repeated again with the 1910 Mann Act or the White Slave Law, which made it a crime to transport women across state lines for immoral purposes. And then today's version of that is the SESTA-FOSTA law that, you know, Donald Trump signed into law, effectively trying to erase the oldest profession from the internet that we helped build. So there's a lot of federal repressive laws that make it difficult for folks to travel, makes it difficult. You know, they're starting to use facial recognition technology to prevent or to connect people to their ads. Wow. Online, making it difficult for sex workers to leave or re-enter the country. But again, most of the arrests are happening on a state level. There's a lot of movement. I don't know if you how policy nerdy you want to get here. Oh, good. So there's actually a little known history, but Rhode Island kind of accidentally decriminalized prostitution for a 6-year period between 2003 and 2009. It was a combination of Coyote, the first sex worker rights organization in the country, filed a lawsuit for sex discrimination in Rhode Island in the 1970s. And so the judge decided that the law, because both buying and selling sexual services was criminalized, but only providers who were overwhelmingly women were being arrested for that. So the judge tasked the legislature with fixing the law. Because of, sort of congressional incompetency, when they revisited that law, they maybe on purpose, maybe accidentally erased.
It sounds like when they stumbled into the Senate and almost killed daylight savings time until everybody freaked out
about
it. It was like nobody was watching.
Nobody was watching. So in the 1970s, they rewrote the law, but nobody noticed this loophole, right? So people were still being arrested in Rhode Island for, prostitution until 2003, when an attorney who was not a criminal attorney, a friend of his, this is a little bit of a long story, but a friend of his came to him in a moment of panic and said, my friend was just arrested for prostitution. Can you help? And he said, yes. And because he wasn't a criminal attorney, he was like, well, I better go look at the law.
Oh, he saw the water.
Yes.
When he did that.
And so he took the case in front of a judge, asked the judge to reread the statute. He agreed with his assessment. And so he started winning these cases until, 2003. There was a lot of newspaper and media coverage, and it became well known that it was not a crime to engage in consensual adult prostitution behind closed doors in a private space in Rhode Island. And that remained true until 2009, when they recriminalized prostitution.
Oh, Lord.
What's so exciting about this is that statisticians from, universities and
California. The researchers were like, yay!
The researchers, exactly, a natural controlled experiment. So for this 6-year period where it was well known that you could not be arrested for engaging in adult consensual sex work, gonorrhea rates dropped 40%.
40%?
Reported rapes dropped 30%.
Wow.
This policy is a policy that increases public safety and health.
Wow.
You want to reduce STIs, you want to reduce violence against women, stop arresting people for engaging in the oldest profession.
Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting. So is this data being used in campaigns in other states?
Yes. So this, we're doing our best to, spread the good news about these studies and the public policy implications. There are also really great advocates in Vermont, Washington State, Washington, D.C., New Hampshire, Rhode Island, of course, New York, that are pushing legislators to think differently about the oldest profession. In New Hampshire, for example, there's a coalition between, libertarians and progressive advocates to try to rewrite laws giving, sex workers who are seeking medical services, making it a crime to discriminate against folks based on their profession, right? Mm. So that sex workers can tell their healthcare providers the truth about what they do.
Wow.
There was recently a win in Rhode Island creating a study commission that is sort of forcing the legislature to acknowledge the impact of decriminalization. In New York, there are two competing bills that are making their way through the New York state legislature, one that would decriminalize sex work and the other that would criminalize clients or third-party folks, right? Like managers or security folks, the people that sex workers hire to help them do their job more efficiently. So we are trying to fight that law and raise awareness around the one that would decriminalize sex work.
Wow.
A couple of years ago, there was a 14-hour hearing in Washington, D.C. on a bill that would have decriminalized sex work in the nation's capital. That bill failed, but as a result of the publicity, arrests in D.C. have dropped over 90%.
Wow.
So there is movement on this issue. Washington State, California, Oregon, sex workers are increasingly being heard by our elected officials, and we are starting to be seen more and more as citizens and constituents and contributors to our communities.
Sorry, I got a little emotional there.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an emergent issue. This is really happening.
And I'm just grateful for those voices. And I'm grateful. Yeah. I think I got a little emotional just because I know that takes enormous bravery because the cultural conversation is not where it should be. And I think anybody contributing to that in powerful ways will have such an impact. And I know you're one of those people. And I thank you so much for that work. Tell our listeners where they can learn more.
You can learn more at oldprosonline.org. We send a newsletter out every Friday that's a roundup of sex worker rights related news and content. There's a ton of resource guides, and you can access all of that on our website. You can listen to the Oldest Profession podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see me live. I'm taking my one-woman show, which is a combination of stand-up comedy, history lecture, and personal storytelling, where I cover 10,000 years of history from a sex worker's perspective. It's called Whore's Eye View, and I'll be touring that show later in the fall. So you don't want to miss that. Please join our email list or follow us on social media at Old Pros Online. And there is just one thing that I wanted to leave your listeners with.
Please.
Which is, you do not have to be able to imagine yourself engaging in this work, right? In order to stand with sex workers mm-hmm. against criminalization. And I think it's really important for progressives to hear and really understand that it is impossible to help a group of people that you are hunting. Mm. So any effort to eradicate or suppress or erect barriers around this work really creates barriers to safety.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on Fancy Politics.
Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin and Sarah, for that discussion. You heard a quick mention of the Backpage case in the conversation. The federal government has brought a host of charges against Backpage.com. The case has been a real journey. It will go to trial for a second time this month. Last week, I discussed the charges and the issues in that case in detail on our premium podcast, More to Say, so be sure to check that out. And then join us here again on Tuesday for the latest news and a look at what we got wrong about COVID. Until then, have the best weekend available to you.
Fancy Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production.
Elise Knapp is our managing director. Maggie Pinton is our director of community engagement.
Xander Singh is the composer of our theme music with inspiration from original work by Dante Lima.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Helen Handley.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Molly Kors.
Catherine Vollmer.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Linda Daniel.
Emily Neasley.
The Petitons!
Tawny Peterson.
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Vallelli.
Amy Whited.
Emily Helen Olson.
Lee Shea McDonough.
Morgan McHugh.
Danny Osmond.
Jen Ross.
Sabrina Drigo.
Becca Dorval.
The Rainbow Family!
Jeff Davis, Joshua Allen, Melinda Johnston, Michelle Wood, Nicole Berkless, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.